Would you turn with me to Psalm 84? Is the psalm that we're going to take tonight. David, thank you for sharing last Wednesday night, and appreciate that. I think we all struggle, if we'll be honest, we struggle with that aspect of, we get it when we first get saved and moving from, as a lot of people have coined, it's not a religion, it's a relationship, and we realize, okay, now it can move in the aspect of God being our judge to where now he can be our father and we can be his son or his daughter, and we get that aspect of being part of the family, and but that aspect, and we use that word intimacy, a lot of times we'll think of husband and wife, but what does that look like, and what is that with our God, and what does he desire, and what can we have? And so this psalmist, we really get to hear his heart as he expresses the joy of intimate communion with God. And so the author of the psalm seems to have been unable for some reason to be able to go on pilgrimage to Jerusalem for maybe one of the feasts. Maybe it was the Passover or Pentecost or the Feast of Tabernacles were the main three that any male over the age of 20 had to make their pilgrimage down to Jerusalem, down to the temple to be able to, or the tabernacle, to be able to go enjoy this. But sometimes it didn't happen. Maybe health reasons or other things. Sometimes life has disappointments, but the psalmist here is going to give us three beatitudes. You'll see the word blessed in verse 4 and 5, and in the last verse in verse 12 of Psalm 84, the blesseds, or the oh how happies. And so these three beatitudes that are going to help us. And so our outline is going to be the blessing of dwelling, desiring, and depending on God. So dwelling on God, desiring God, and depending on him is what we're going to be looking at. So let's go to our first four verses. As it says at the very beginning of the psalm, to the chief musician on an instrument of Gath, a psalm of the sons of Korah. It says, how lovely is your tabernacle or your dwelling place, O Lord of hosts. My soul longs, yes, even faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Even the sparrow has found a home and the swallow a nest for herself where she may lay her young. Even your altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God. Blessed are those who dwell in your house. They will still be praising you, Selah, or pause. You'll see that word Selah again in after verse 8, the second pause. And so it really kind of breaks out into these three stanzas here. I've entitled this being preoccupied with God. One of the first things we see in verse 2 there is this aspect of a longing. Remember back in Psalm 42 and 43, as my heart pants after the, as a deer, as a hart or a deer pants after the water brook, so my soul pants after you. It's the sons of Korah writing that also. Some would say it's the same psalmist here, Psalm 42, 43, and it's kind of a crescendo building up to 84 here in his intimacy and his walk with the Lord. We don't know that for sure. We do know that it is part of the sons of Korah that are writing this, whether it's the same guy or not. We're not positive. But there seems to be that same aspect of longing. I have such an eagerness. Let's just picture this guy 100 miles away and longing to get there. But let's say it's because of an illness or something that he doesn't get to make pilgrimage. The pilgrimage was a blast. That's a long travel for sure. But a lot of times the whole village would go out together for safety's sake. And so it'd be a few days' journey, a week's journey to be able to get down there. And the closer that you get to Jerusalem, just the excitement starts building. Every time that we've made pilgrimage there and we've taken trips there, and Kelly and I have gone about 9 or 10 times over to Israel. But each time we go, and I design the trips to be able to, the highlight is Jerusalem. And so we'll spend our time up north or way down south, but ultimately that the coming into Jerusalem is a real highlight, as it was with the pilgrims way back when. And they would start in some of these psalms and singing them, and they talk about ascending the heights, and where do my eyes look to? It looks to the mountains, it looks to the hills. It looks because up on that hill was where the temple was, and just how exciting that was to be able to, we're going to where God dwells. This longing, this being eager, being homesick. His whole being, he says in verse 2, his whole being is what's crying out. His soul and his heart and his flesh are longing for this experience of worship at the sanctuary. What makes the temple so appealing is not the building itself, but it's the living God. And he even gets that at the bottom of verse 2. My soul longs, yes, even faints. Means I'm pining away. I'm fainting with a longing for the courts of the Lord. My heart, my flesh cry out, what? For the living God. It's not for the building. And they were beautiful. It was just polished white marble. And where you didn't see polished white marble, you saw big giant sheets of gold, as Josephus, the historian, shows this place. It's just absolutely beautiful. We know it even during the time of Jesus when the disciples there on the Mount of Olives, and they're kicking back on the Mount of Olives just above the Garden of Gethsemane, and looking across the Kidron Valley, and they specifically say, look at these stones. And Jesus says, there won't be one stone on top of another stone. And he starts prophesying of end times and what was going to take place. But they're saying, look at that. It is so absolutely beautiful. And he's saying, it's not always going to be there. It's not always going to be the geographical location. That's going to be done in 40 years. That's going to be completely wiped out. Don't you understand? I am leaving and going away. And it's better for you that I go away, because there's one coming that is going to be able to be not only with you, but inside each and every one of you. Instead of me here in one location, it's going to be the Spirit in every believer's life to be able to go across the whole entire globe to be able to be a shining light for me. Sometimes the place, if he was just excited about going to the place, can just become an escape. Elijah hanging out and hiding in the cave where God has to show up and say, Elijah, what are you doing here? Finding that place of the place of refuge, the cave, the protection from Jezebel or whoever you're running from, and that place. He says, what are you doing here? Sometimes it's not a place, sometimes it becomes a fetish, and by fetish I mean the worship of an inanimate object. That can be defined a few different ways, as we know. But the worship of an inanimate object, where we know that the temple became that for some, the tabernacle was that for some, churches become that for some, where it becomes the aspect of the building and what's there. Now we are to be preoccupied with God. Abiding in the Lord is not a matter of geography, for you can worship him and love him wherever you are. We know that. He came to the temple to meet God. That's what it says in verse 2, to meet God, the living God. Some are happy to have an excuse to stay away from God's house. This guy's saying, oh, I wish I was able to get there. Then in verse 3, he moves on and talks about a sparrow and a swallow. Even the sparrow has found a home, the swallow a nest. Maybe he's picturing, you know, somewhere near the temple site there where they're just comfortable in being there. I pulled up to the Starbucks over in Temecula off of Inez right there. And there's a little Italian restaurant next door, and I can't think of the name of the place. Anybody know the name? That's the one, Gourmet Italian. And I pulled up there, and I was doing my devotions, and I saw this little sparrow fly in. And I looked, and it had made this nest behind their speaker and next to a 300-watt quartz light. And so I thought, that's not a great place to put a nest. You got the speaker when it's pumping at night, when all the people are there for the restaurant and that. And then this big blazing light. I don't know how it worked for the bird. But anyways, I just remember focusing in on it. That's probably not a great place. But, you know, here's a great place where the sparrow and the swallow were comfortable at the house of God. How much more his servants, how much more the tender hospitality of his God, of welcoming us in into that place of intimacy with him. This place, our church ought to feel like a home. You know, when people each Sunday, we have new people come moving into our area or looking for a church, and they'll come up and they'll introduce themselves and they'll say, you know, we haven't settled on, you know, we're just, um, you know, coming to, can I check out the church? And we haven't settled on a place yet. And I always do the same thing. I grab their hands and I say, allow me to pray for you. That is a very difficult thing because it's family. And it's always very difficult in leaving a fellowship. And so let me just pray for you right now. And I always run. We have over 142 churches in our valley. We got some great pastors. I absolutely love them in town and wonderful churches. And so I always encourage them, if you're going to make this your church family, that's what I want it to become. It really needs to be your family. That's what I want to pray for, that whichever place that you find, it truly becomes family. And not that you only get, but you're able to give, and God be able to use the gifts in you. And so I kind of go through that with them and pray for them, but I really want it to become home, a living room to them where they can get to know their God. After almost every third service, little Noah Mosa does laps in our sanctuary here. He's about this tall, and if you've ever been here after third service, I don't know how he gets his legs moving, and especially with the ramp here, it could be difficult for a little, I don't know, how old is he? Three, four? And he just buzzes laps, and he'll just do that. And mom and dad just, they'll stand there, and they're kind of keeping an eye on him, but he'll just buzz laps. And he'll get done, and he is never tired, and I just pray for mom and dad all the more, you know? With Jeff and Jennifer, but it's fun to see that. I think of Andre and Jennifer's child, little Lucas, usually on Wednesday nights, and Lucas with the hair, and usually Lucas is doing the same thing. He's cruising. They're keeping him off the stage, off the instruments, but other than that, he's just cruising in here. We used to have a couple kids that after every Wednesday night, they would start at the top, and they would roll all the way down to the very front there. And I just thought that was cool. And I remember talking with an usher once saying that they shouldn't be doing that. There should be reverence for the house of God. And I said, then I completely misunderstand who God is, because this ought to be his living room and this ought to be his house. And I'm thrilled to death that kids see going to church as the aspect of being like home and are that comfortable in it. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think so. I love seeing that take place, huh? Isn't that a cool thing? It's home to them. It should be home to us. This should be a place of getting out of the crazy world, and when we come together for a time to worship together and be reminded of, hey, let's press on and let's go forward. And yeah, life is hard, but God. And he's going to help us through these things. And remember, it's glory at the other end. And remember, right now it's a cross, but later it's the crown. And to encourage each other of that, and then get back out there and do it again. That's what church is all about. When life disappoints, abide in him. Let's look at our second section, verse 5 through 8, the desiring portion of it. Blessed is the man whose strength is in you, whose heart is set on pilgrimage. As they pass through the valley of Baca, they make it a spring, and the rain also covers it with pools. They go from strength to strength. Each one appears before God in Zion. O Lord, God of hosts, hear my prayer. Give ear, O God of Jacob, Selah. I'm going to read 9:2. O God, behold our shield and look upon the face of our anointed, or the Messiah. As I said earlier, oftentimes old town would be able to travel on pilgrimage. And so he's saying, blessed is the man whose strength is in you, whose heart's set on pilgrimage. But what if you don't get to go? What if you're too sick? What if you're too old and you can't travel anymore? What about, isn't the key, and it's the heart is the key in verse 5 there, whose heart is set on pilgrimage, because God reads the heart. And there's going to be times where there's disappointments, and I can't go. I broke my leg, my donkey broke, whatever it was, and I can't get there. And so what do we do now? As they would go, oftentimes, as I said, they would be singing, and maybe we can find in this portion here. And they're also looking around in three different directions, looking within, looking back, and looking ahead. The first aspect of looking within, where again, it's their heart set on pilgrimage, whose heart is a highway to Zion. Everyone has a roadmap in his heart that takes him where he really wants to go. See, right now in your heart is a roadmap, and you are on that road, and you are going in that direction where you really, really, really want to go. So we'll look within yourself today, and you can ask, what kind of roadmap do you have, and what road am I on, and where is it leading, and where is its end? Is it the Lord? Is it intimacy with him, or is it building your own kingdom or something else? It's what's in your heart that counts, and so we look within. The second aspect is looking back. It says they passed through the valley of Baca, which is the valley of weeping. We don't know anything really about this valley or exactly where it was. We have that Baca. It refers to a species of a balsam tree. It mentions them back in 2 Samuel 5:23. But the word is related to the sound weep. And so I think it's really a play on words here. Because each and every one of us pass through that valley of weeping, the valley of sorrows, the valley of the hurts that are going on in your life. But in getting through the valley, this person, when he goes through it, he turns back and he's made it a stream. It used to be a desert and dry, arid wasteland. But now after I've gone through it, I've left behind here some springs of water and rain and pools of blessings that have pooled up there. As they went through it, they left behind a blessing for someone else. Now, tell me if I'm not right in this. Isn't it when you're going through those times, you're looking for everybody, you're saying, help me, help me. What are you going to do for me while I'm going through this hurt time of hurt? And we're looking at me getting ministered to and being, you know, touched by someone else. And yet the psalmist here is saying, hey, here's a way to go through the valley. Is make it a blessing is as you're going through it. Again, we just want it over. We want it done. We want it on the other side. And here's the far-reaching bullseye to be able to go for is leave blessings behind you. The pilgrim's anticipation of the temple experience transforming the desert for them into this place of springs. I wonder if we leave behind a blessing for someone else or, again, expect others to give us a blessing. Well, we look within, we look back to see if we left a good trail, and then we look ahead as it says in verse 7, they go from strength to strength. Romans, and I forget what verse it was in, but it says from faith to faith. No, that's not the verse. Okay, so it's in Romans, from faith to faith. Sometimes there's wording like this, but this one moving strength to strength. Strength? Yeah, because sometimes pilgrimage was very difficult. It took them a lot to be able to get down to temple of Kos and feeding your animal and whatever it was to be able to get down there and then putting yourself up in an inn once you got there and then to pay for the sacrifices that you purchased down there to be able to, for the priest to be able to sacrifice and all that's going on. And if you had to buy a lamb and do the Passover sacrifice. So a lot of costs involved in doing all of that. So it's going to cost something. And so it's strength to strength. But each person makes it. They go from strength to strength. Each one appears before God in Zion. Each person makes it. They move through. You look around and you think, I can't make it. But he says, but you will. Some come with a problem. I don't desire the Lord right now and it bothers me. Well, I would say, no, if it bothers you, then you do desire to be with the Lord. Oh, there's something in the way, and maybe there's stuff or, you know, too much going on in your life and just too much craziness going on or whatever else. But a lot of times we beat ourselves up saying, my heart doesn't feel like being intimate with the Lord right now. And you're coming and asking the question. I think, well, if you're coming and asking the question, then you do care. And that's a good sign. You do absolutely desire it. I love Chuck Swindoll's little tiny book, Intimacy with the Almighty. I've recommended that a number of times, but in that he quotes Henry Nouwen. And I've just always loved this imagination that he puts through, and I think you'll relate to the same struggle. It's in a portion, it's broken up into three S words. One of them is solitude for the little chapters that he has in this little book. And so one, he's talking about the aspect of solitude. We have such busy, loud lives of just kind of getting aside for a time. But he says this, as soon as I decide to stay in my solitude, confusing ideas, disturbing images, wild fantasies, and weird associations jump about in my mind like monkeys in a banana tree. I like that. Anger and greed begin to show their ugly faces. And he says, the task is to persevere in my solitude, to stay in my cell until all my seductive visitors get tired of pounding on my door and leave me alone. Can you relate to that? Those times of just breaking through that prayer time where you absolutely move from saying your prayers to actually praying, actually doing your duty before God to actually breaking through and talking with him. And a lot of times where it comes through is in the times of breaking, where you're finally just fed up with God and you'd start getting honest with him like the psalmist does. And say, God, I'm hurting. And all of a sudden you're crying out and then you realize, hey, I made it to the spot. I got there. I feel like we're talking now and I can be quiet and listen and he's speaking to me now. And all of a sudden you find yourself breaking through. We need to look in all three of these ways. We need to look within. We need to look at the trail we're leaving. We need to look ahead from strength to strength. And that's what's going to continue to help build us. See, when life disappoints us, we need to be sure our heart's desires are pleasing unto God. Let's look at our third section, and from verse 9 through 12, with the aspect of depending. We'll read 9 over. O God, behold our shield, and look upon the face of your anointed, or the Messiah. For a day in your courts is better than 1,000. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the tents of wickedness. For the Lord God is a sun and a shield. The Lord will give grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from those who walk uprightly. O Lord of hosts, blessed is the man who trusts in you. What a great psalm. Verse 10, for a day in your courts is better than 1,000. That's where we sing that song. I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness. A doorkeeper. Rather serve in the temple than be served anywhere else. But we're not exactly sure what this young man from Korah is crying out here. Of exactly what this aspect of doorkeeping is, there's a few different ideas. It could refer to some menial task of a servant. I'd rather do that menial task at God's house rather than whatever else in the world. Not whatever else in the world, but being in another place where all of my, you know, the worldly things or the worldly pleasures are there for me. I'd rather be at God's house. It'd be better translated, I'd rather stand at the threshold and so that than entrance. I'd rather be on the doorstep. Maybe even speaking to the beggars that would sit while people were coming in to be holy. So that was a great place to beg. Right outside the doors there of the, out on Solomon's porch there on the Temple Mount and be waiting there for the people to come in. They knew they had some coin, at that time because they'd be coming and giving their tithe and they're thinking of the aspect of God and feeding the poor. And so it was a good place to hang out. So I'd rather be a beggar on God's doorstep than living in some tent of lasciviousness and, you know, everything. All the world ministering to my needs. I don't know if you remember the story or not, but back in Numbers chapter 16 is where we hear about these the Korathites, and with them they had different priestly things that they did, but it was in Numbers 16 where they get the gumption to come up to Moses and Aaron. And I'll read the one verse and what they say. They gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, you take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? So when Moses heard it, he fell on his face. Why do you guys think you're so important? We're all holy here. We're all God's children. We're all on the same even plane here. But how come you guys are exalted? You get the great chores around the tabernacle. And we get the little menial tasks. That's what they're asking back then. It wasn't a good thing to do, if I can just sum up the chapter that way. They got smote all over the place. Maybe then, as this psalmist learned from their forefathers, the Korathites, and what they did, and they just thought, you know, those menial tasks, it's an okay thing. You know, it's lesson learned by Psalm 84 here. It's just that's okay. Moses, Aaron, you guys do those tasks over there. I'll brush the little brass over here. Whatever it is, I'd rather be doing that than these other things. So maybe they learned from that. A day in your courts is better than 1,000. I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness. Paul said it this way, I count all things but loss. The rest of the world, put it all together. It offers me the whole entire world, all the money, all of its pleasures and everything else. I stick it over in this pile. I still want my God. Asaph said it, who have I in heaven but you? Who else is there but you. One day in your courts, better than 1,000 anywhere else. Greater part of mankind desires to live without knowing why. They simply wish their life to be prolonged. They just don't know why. I just don't want to die. I don't know what's on the other side. And so this whole aspect of life to them is length of time rather than what it can be now. What does Jesus promise us is not only life, but life more abundantly, or the abundant life. He's setting a higher value on one day in divine service and upon a long time passed among the men of the world. Check out 11. For the Lord God is a sun and a shield. The Lord will give grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from those who walk uprightly. No good thing will he withhold for those who walk uprightly. It's not for everybody, for those who walk uprightly. But what's the promise there? I'm not going to hold back. God wanting to just dump out of the windows of heaven upon us his blessings upon blessings. There's a TV commercial, and I forget what it is or what it's for, but it's a mom that says, you know, I know I can't go to school and always be with my child, wanting to protect her child. I can't always be there for him. And I forget what the rest of the commercial is. But I was thinking, here's a parent that can be and can even promise this, to be able to say, I don't care if you go to school, work, wherever you go, I can be with you. I will be with you. And I'll be there as your son and your shield and give you grace and I'll give you glory. And so he's able to give that promise there. He becomes whatever the need is. That's the listings there. I'll be a son for you when you need a son. I'll be a shield when you need a shield. I'll give you grace when you need grace. And I'll give you glory when it's time for glory. When it's dark, in the midst of darkness, I'll give you the sun. Hot noonday sun, they're always talking about being shielded from that. So I'll give you that shade. In our earthly pilgrimage, he gives us grace. When the morning of heaven breaks forth, we get to go into glory. Psalm 81:10, just a little bit earlier. Open your mouth wide and I will fill it. That's what he's saying here. No good thing will I withhold from you. Why would I? What good thing would you withhold from your kids if you're able to meet that need? Now we see with his grace and glory in verse 11 here, grace is how our spiritual journey starts. Aren't we saved by grace? And how does it end? Glorification. We get our bodies glorified and with him. It's the beginning and the end of our journey is what he's talking about here. And of course, everything in between. Between grace and glory, life can be rather difficult though. And that's where this pilgrimage is hard. And sometimes when you don't get to make pilgrimage and you're on your own, but you're allowing God to know it, but here's my heart, God. I wish I could be there even when I can't. Wonder how you need your God to reveal himself to you even tonight. He's that ever-present parent who can protect a child, his child from any evil. The psalmist well says he won't withhold any good thing from those who walk uprightly. That's somebody who walks blamelessly. It's a person of integrity who walks in the light, who's obedient to his word, who is loving him, who is trusting him. That would be the definition for those who walk uprightly. That's the importance of doing that.